Chapter 23. In a few moments he had undone the work of months. Overnight, Leah had become again the wan ghost who had cowered beside her dying grandmother. She did not comb her golden hair, or sweep the floor, or speak. She did not seem to recognize her loom. All day she sat with her head bowed and her hands idle. It was as though everything that had happened since the day of Daniel's homecoming had never been, except that one thing had changed. Now, above all else, she feared him. In a torment of remorse, Daniel did all the work about the house, the sweeping and washing and baking. He steeled himself against her constant trembling and the cringing whenever he came through the door. When she refused to notice her food so long as he was in the room, he left the bowl on the mat beside her. Sometimes, when he returned, it was half empty. More often, it was untouched. He pleaded with her very gently. He was more patient than he had ever imagined he was capable of being. But her eyes, when he glimpsed them rarely, were like empty windows. He dreaded to look lest he should see the demon staring out of them. He was sure now that they possessed her completely. Just when the hope of Jesus began to work in him, he did not know. It began as a small flicker in the darkness of his mind. All day at the forge the hope grew slowly, till it filled his every thought. They said that Jesus could cast out demons, demons so terrible that they made a man tear his own flesh. Could he cast out the silent demons too, those that hid themselves deep in the shadows? Could he ask anything of Jesus when he had refused to follow him? And did he dare to ask Jesus to help Leah when he knew in his heart that he himself was to blame that the demons had come back? Yet he remembered how Jesus, in a way he had never understood, had somehow lifted from him the terrible weight of Samson's death. If only he could take to Jesus this heavier burden of guilt. In the sleepless hours, he forgot the doubts that had confused him that night on the rooftop. He remembered only the infinite kindness of the teacher's eyes. He did not think that Jesus would turn him away. There came an afternoon when his mind was suddenly made up. He laid down his hammer and took the road to Capernaum. He reached the city toward evening and made his way at once to the shore. The fishing boats were deserted. A single aged man, his crutches beside him, stared out over the water. "They have all gone," he whined. "Not a thought for us who couldn't walk." "Gone where?" "Who knows?" the man sighed. "They have been gone all day. They followed the master, a great crowd of them." He went out in the boat, and Andrew rowed him across the lake. The people ran after him along the shore. "Hundreds of them. I couldn't keep up." "Which way?" "To the east, toward the plain." Daniel hurried away. He was in no mood to wait, especially in this dismal company. He would go out to meet the returning crowd. For the first time he understood why they had refused to be left behind. This time he wanted something himself, and he knew their impatience. It was not hard to follow the route they had taken along the rocky shore path. He began to realize, as one excited person after another pointed the way, that a very large crowd had passed by, and that many along the shore must have dropped their work and followed after. He saw before him a barren rise of hills. The light was failing fast, but he could just distinguish a great mass of people, more than he had ever seen before, in one place, clotted like a vast herd of sheep on the slope. What were they doing there so late? Presently, the sound of their voices reached him, like the roar of the sea in a storm, louder and louder, swelling wave on wave. The master must be through speaking, for no one could possibly make himself heard over such a tumult. Above the roar he caught an occasional scream, hysterical, high-pitched. He had never heard a sound quite like this. His heart began to pound. He caught up finally with the rear of the crowd. They were all on their feet, pushing, shoving, craning their necks with a frenzy he had never seen before. Up ahead, their voices rose in a sort of chant. "What is it?" He caught the arm of the man nearest him. "Why are they shouting?" "Why? Where are your wits, boy?" "I've just come. Tell me." "It's the Messiah. Listen." As he grasped the words, his heart gave a great leap. "Hosanna, blessed be he that cometh." Over and over and over. "It is the day of the Lord," screamed a voice above all the rest. "He has declared himself." Daniel thought with rapture, forgetting Leah, forgetting his exhaustion and doubt, forgetting everything but the fierce joy that shook him from head to foot. "Did he tell you?" he demanded, still clutching the man's arm. "Tell me, what did he say?" "Say? He did better than say. He fed us. Don't you see the bread? Pick some up for yourself. There's plenty." The man shook himself loose. "Praise be," he shouted, pushing forward. "Salvation has come." Daniel looked down. He saw a glimmer of white on the ground and stooped to it. Bread. He held it in his hand. Farther on, he saw another crust and another. Bread? For all these people? People all over the hillside? There must be thousands. "Wait a minute," he ran after the man. "Where did the bread come from?" "How do I know? All I know is they sent back word for us to sit down. Then someone passed me bread." The shouting was growing more frenzied. "Let him be king," they screamed. "He is our deliverer. Down with Rome." Still, Daniel could not see Jesus. He began to push his way through the jostling bodies. If only Joel were here, he thought with sharp regret. The end of all their waiting, and Joel was not here to see it. "Daniel," out of the darkness came a familiar voice. "Simon." The two friends grasped each other's arms. "Where is he, Simon?"
"He is gone."
"Gone? They're going to crown him king."
"I know, but he has gone. We pleaded with him, but he told us to hold back the crowd, and then he went with Simon and James and John."
"Where?"
"Back into the hills somewhere."
"We must go after him. Hurry."
"We will not find him. He said that no one was to follow him."
Daniel rocked back from the words as from a wall. Baffled, he stood quivering, his eyes straining ahead. Where could he look in the darkness? Numb with disappointment, he stared at his friend. Then he realized that all around him, like a bonfire that had leaped too high, the exultation was dying down. Shouts of joy were giving way to cries of anger. Like Daniel, the people could not believe that Jesus had gone. He must be hiding, waiting to be coaxed. Here and there, fierce, sudden arguments broke out. If the man wanted to be king, why didn't he stand up and act like a king? Women threaded through the crowd, searching out their men and urging them to go home. Slowly, the tide turned back down the hill. "Come," said Simon quietly. "You can spend the night with me."
"Simon, why?" Daniel burst out. "They would have given him a crown."
"I don't know. Perhaps it is not time." "When will there ever be a better time?"
"That is for him to choose."
"But will he? What does he want? What sort of man is he anyway?"
Simon looked back at him. In the darkness, his eyes suddenly blazed. "I believe he is the Messiah sent from God," he said.
Daniel felt a chill along his spine. "He has said so?"
"Not to me. Perhaps to those three. I think Simon knows."
"Then why would he not be king?"
"I have told you. I don't know."
"If he is the Messiah, how soon will he lead us against the enemy?"
Simon walked on for a time without answering. Finally, he spoke. "He will never lead us against Rome, Daniel. I have given up all hope of that." The quiet words had the force of a blow. Daniel had his answer at last. Joel had tried to tell him, and Thaisha, even Jesus himself. Now Simon had confirmed the doubt that all these months had blocked the way between him and the man from Nazareth.
"Then why do you stay with him?" All the boy's bitterness broke through the reproach.
"Where else could I go?" Simon answered.
"What has he offered you that is worth more than Israel's freedom?"
"He has offered me the kingdom."
Daniel's anger was rising. "When do you think you'll have this kingdom?"
"You will not understand this," said Simon. "In a way, I have it already."
"That's fine." The boy's scorn was close to tears. "You have the kingdom. You can shut your eyes while all around you—"
"I have not shut my eyes," said Simon. "I know well enough that nothing in Israel is changed. But I know that it will be, even if I never live to see it with my own eyes."
"Listen to me, Daniel," he went on. "You've seen him caring for those people, the ones so low that no one, not I or anyone else, cared what happened to them. When I see that, I know that the God of Israel has not forgotten us. Or why would he have sent Jesus to them instead of to the rich and the learned?
like a shepherd, he says, who will not let any of his sheep be lost. I am a poor man and ignorant, but I know now that with a God like that, I am safe." Daniel stood staring at his friend. Simon had lost his senses altogether. "Safe? Jesus has put you all in danger." Simon's voice was steady. "Jesus has taught us that we must not be afraid of the things that men can do to us." "Suppose they put chains on all of you and drag you off to prison?" "He says that the only chains that matter are fear and hate, because they chain our souls. If we do not hate anyone and do not fear anyone, then we are free."
"Free? In chains? Simon, you know what they could do to you. How could you possibly not be afraid?"
"I don't say that I am not afraid," said Simon, "but Jesus is not, and he is the hope of Israel."
"What has he done to prove it? How do you know you're not risking your life for nothing?"
"We can never know," Simon answered slowly. "God hides the future from man's eyes. We are forced to choose, not knowing. I have chosen Jesus." This was his chance tonight. Do you think he will ever do anything now?
"I don't know what he will do. It is enough for me that he has promised."
"It is not enough for me," Daniel cried. "Promises are easy. They are nothing but words. I want a leader who will make his promises good."
He flung himself away from Simon and stumbled ahead into the darkness. He could not see his way, but he knew that from now on he was alone. There was no friend to fight beside him. There was no leader to follow. There was nothing left to him but his hatred and his vow.